Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Help keep nonprofit food radio on the air and get a limited release HRN t-shirt designed by artist Chema Scandal. When you become an HRN member or renew your existing membership at the $90 level, you'll receive a shirt created exclusively for members as our thank you gift. Don't wait, because this limited edition t-shirt is only available until December 31st. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to support HRN at any level. There's more swag and benefits available for any tax-deductible donation. You can even get your company on the HRN airwaves as a perk of our business membership program. Head to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guests are an expert group of wine people. We have asked the best wine people in the business for their holiday champagne recommendations. I'm Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. We end the year 2022 with our best champagne and bubbly recommendations for the holidays and beyond. We'll first talk to Robin Wright, beverage director, Danny Meyer's Chi Siamo near Hudson Yards. Next, we speak with Yannick Benjamin, proprietor of the newly opened Beaupierre Wine and Spirits in Hell's Kitchen and also Contento Restaurant in Harlem, along with Heidi Terzin, formerly the beverage director, Gotham Restaurant and co-proprietor of Beaupierre. Then we speak with Aldo Sohn from Le Bernardin and Aldo Sohn Wine Bar in New York City. We talk to Annie Shee, partner at King Restaurant in Soho and the newly opened Jupiter in Rockefeller Center. Finally, we speak with Josh Green, the editor and publisher of Wine and Spirits magazine, from our year-end interview. I'm talking to Robin Wright. Robin's the beverage director at Danny Meyer's restaurant, Chi Siamo, in New York City. Robin, the holidays and the new year are upon us. Although everyone should be drinking champagne, which you and I agree year-round, what should we be drinking for the holidays? So I want to ask you a bunch of questions, all right? So the first thing is, I think what people want to get to, can you recommend a great value champagne?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first off, Transatlantic Bubbles offers a lot of great value champagne. Some of my favorite would be Grenier, Corbon. They make a really beautiful Aviz wine. They make 2010 and 2002. 100% Chardonnay. Those wines are beautiful. But my favorite right now is one that I pour by the glass and I'm like absolutely attached to, just because it offers great value for quality. And that is Maxime Ponson, who is the son.
Wait, slow down. Maxime?
Yeah. Maxime. So M-A-X-I-M-E. He's the son of Pascal Ponson, which is a big Ponson that you're thinking of.
Right.
He is organic and biodynamic. He's making wines with his brother Camille. His father has passed away, I think, in 2018. So he's essentially making wines in the Petite Montagne region, and he makes a lot of, you know, Pinot Meunier based champagne, and he works with Chardonnay and Pinot Noir as well. His wines are just really vibrant and bright. They have structure. They have texture. They're just really everything that I want. And, you know, at first I thought that maybe his wines would be more too textural or too creamy or rich for the, you know, average champagne palate. But these wines have gone over really, really well with, you know, all of our, you know, people coming
and
in.
And price-wise?
Price-wise.
Retail, I mean, they're what?
I don't know. I would
50, 60, 70, 80?
Less. Definitely.
Less.
I think.
Okay, that's what I'm looking
for.
I don't
know. I would assume, but I have never seen, and I think it's just so hard to find, you know, small grower producers in retail shops. I mean, it's so hard.
Right.
Like, I would say you have to go on wine.com or something. I don't
right.
know. I can never
Which
find
any. Which is a
good
any. Recommendation. Because as much as wine shops want to serve you and they curate stuff, they're
yeah.
not bringing a ton of this stuff.
Not like the good stuff. Yeah. Not like the stuff that we want to drink. You know?
All right, next question. What if we wanted a splurge-worthy champagne? I mean, there's always a handful of names that come up, like Solas and Krug and stuff like that. But what's your take on that?
There's so many, honestly.
A couple.
Yeah.
Know, and by listing a couple doesn't yeah. rank them or exclude any.
You know, there's one wine that I really, like, I love Agropar's wines. I love his entire range, but I really, really like his Abysoise, and I also love his Venus wine, which is actually named after the horse that farms that area. And I love animals, so I just think it's really beautiful.
So if he's farming with a horse.
So I'm going to splurge on that Venus. That's what I'm splurging on for Christmas.
If he's farming with a horse, is he organic, biodynamic?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. I just love that he has a reference to his horse.
That's cool.
It's beautiful. I'm just an animal lover, so I love that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
All right, last question. You told us what your favorite champagne is, right?
Mm.
Didn't you mention it before?
Yeah, Ponson.
Right.
Drink it every single day.
All right, so I'm going to be talking to a bunch of people. I'm going to ask you this question. Best temperature to serve champagne. People tend to serve it too cold. Sometimes they forget to chill it. But if you're planning to do it right, and I'm not talking like exact temperature, but what do you...
I think that there's a range of temperature with champagne, and I like to start with very cold, like 55, like the normal champagne temperature that everyone thinks of.
Is that like wine cellar temperature?
That's champagne temperature,
okay.
For sure. And I would say that's what people think that they need to stick with the entire time. I think you can enjoy the evolution of the wine as it warms up. And I love enjoying that evolution. I never put it back on ice. You know, it's cold when it comes, and it's beautiful, and it's nervy, and it's bright. But then it just slowly warms up, and then you start to get other characters. And I mean, I enjoy both of it. I like it super cold. I also like it when it starts to warm up. So I enjoy that.
So I'm with you, except I'm in the camp that I don't mind it warmer because I think the flavors come out and there's
yeah.
a whole different nuance to
oh,
it.
Oh, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
Let people, so not too
yeah.
cold, but 55-ish
yeah, 55,
cellar temperature.
55,
and
start
if it
55,
warms up,
you know? And then the acidity is super pronounced, and it gives you that zing that you're looking for when you want to drink champagne. And then it warms up, and then you get the other character. It's fun to just see the evolution. It's fun.
Perfect. All right, I want to thank Robin Wright. Robin is the beverage director at Ci Siamo in Midtown, actually by Hudson Yards in New York City. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Anyways.
All right, so I'm back with Robin because I told Robin... I sort of led on to the list before, and I wanted to ask her for any non-champagne sparklers, and I end the interview without asking her. So I'm coming back, Robin, to give you a chance to recommend, because not everybody is going to buy champagne or like champagne, or maybe a sparkler would make sense. What's a good holiday sparkler? Can you think of something?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, there's actually, I think my favorite one that really blew me away and impressed me, and my Soms sold it out like immediately, is Luis Pato from Beiras in Portugal.
So P-A-T-O?
P-A-T-O.
Luis Pato.
Luis Pato.
From Portugal.
From Beiras. He works with Baga.
B-E-I-R-A-S?
B-A-G.
Oh, right, yeah. right.
Oh, the region or the grape?
The region.
The region is B-E-I-R-A-S.
Okay.
Beiras. And then Baga is a grape. And his name, his Spumante Rosé, or Spumante, however they say it in Portuguese, from Portugal, is called Informal or Informal. And that rosé is, like, incredible. It's really funky, wild, savory. I think it has a nice, really beautiful spice element to it that would be great with richer dishes that you would expect to have. You know, I would also think it would be a great Thanksgiving wine, but, you know, we're too late for that. But
but Christmas meals are similar to
spice,
ham,
flavors.
Turkey,
yeah, exactly, exactly. This would be fantastic with those dishes. So.
Is it somewhat readily available?
I would say
so. It's not like a culty thing that's impossible
to find. My friend, Lewis, he started an importing company called GK Wine Imports, and
he's bringing it in?
He's bringing in Luis Bato. So and Luis Bato is classic from
It'll be
Portugal.
At interesting retailers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should be really affordable, too. I would assume it's like under 20 retail.
Okay.
For our list, it was like $60 on the list. That's very cheap for
That is a great reco, and that's why I ask people like you to make those recos. So I will also post all these on our social media. Thank you again, Robin.
Of course. Thank you.
I'm at Beaupierre Wine and Spirits in Hell's Kitchen, New York City with Yannick Benjamin and Heidi Terzin. Yannick is the proprietor of Beaupierre and the critically acclaimed Contento restaurant in Harlem. Heidi is the former beverage director at Gotham Restaurant and is co-proprietor here at Beaupierre. I am lucky to have both of you together. So I want to ask you guys a bunch of questions about some holiday drinking, points more towards sparkly. So give me your take on this. So the first question is, can you recommend a great value champagne?
Yeah, I think the Gausset Grand Reserve offers a great value. You're able to get a complex champagne coming from the Champagne region using all three of the grapes. It has a nice mouthfeel. It's full bodied and it really gives you everything you're looking for a champagne at a nice value.
And you're selling it here for $55.
That's
which is
correct.
Exactly the range I wanted. I realize we don't have to do two each, but do you have one?
No, but I mean, for me, I think the one that really over-delivers right now, it's obviously a little bit more, but the Frederick Savard Louverture, I mean, I think this guy is unbelievable. He's completely killing it. This is a grower champagne. It retails here at $67, and I understand that prices for champagne are quite high, but you know, when we talk about what's relevant, I think this is just really crushes it.
I don't think you can go wrong with Gausset and Savard.
No, absolutely
right,
not.
So those are good ones. All right. Just because you're a retailer, and I'm talking to Sams and other wine people, you've only been open, what, a month? What's been the best-selling champagne, or what do people seem to be asking about?
We've had a mix of different requests, but I would definitely say that people are very much interested in family-owned, small production champagne for sure. That's the thing, grower champagne initially.
So you're indicating that your customer is sort of a informed consumer to know, you know, you got any good grower?
Yes, for sure.
Stuff, right?
Yeah. I have not gotten any people asking for big brands
like Louis Coco.
I mean, all good stuff, you know, but just have not.
So to that point, do you think people are making the trip because they know you opened a place, or it's a little of both? People from the neighborhood are just buying? Because if they know you opened a place, they know that,
right.
You know, you're going to curate good stuff.
I think that people are coming here because there's a story behind the place. I think very rarely, I mean, you're seeing more and more of it, but actually wine stores that are being operated by people that have experience with wine, that's their passion, that's their love. They're not just opening up a wine or liquor store, you know.
It's a passion thing with a curation behind it.
Exactly, so
which is great for the consumer.
For sure.
All right, next question. Heidi, splurge-worthy champagne. If you wanted to get one of the ones you recommended and then get a baller bottle, what's a good splurge worthy?
Christophe Mignon is an excellent champagne.
Mignon.
Yep. Yeah.
Christophe Mignon. Okay.
He's a great grower of champagne. Super small production, really tasty. We went to visit him the past year. And he's doing Pinot Meunier, and it's super complex.
Is that 100% Pinot Meunier?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's really interesting. But it's a great wine. So he's one of my favorite producers. So that's definitely splurge worthy.
That's not that crazy though. Yeah. No, $1.15.
Yeah. $1.15 is not. Yeah. And we only got, I think, of this wine, maybe 6 bottles allocated to us.
That's it.
So that's it. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
it's not easy to get.
And I think, you know, when it's done correctly, Meunier in Champagne is absolutely unbelievable. It's got texture. Us.
I agree with that. All right. So we both agree on the Mignon, right?
Yep.
All right. So there are people that want champagne. Some people maybe can't afford it. And some people are looking for something interesting. So can you think of any non-champagne sparklers we should consider?
Well, for myself, definitely the one that I've been really excited about. There was a sample bottle of this dropped off a couple of months ago, and I just fell in love with it. It's Marie de Louvois. It's a Carte Noire, so Marie de Louvois.
So D-E-L-O-U-V-O-Y, Marie de Louvois.
Three words.
I don't have the pronunciation.
But Carte Noire, and this is 100% Pinot Noir, and this is a Crémant de Bourgogne. It's actually right on the border of Champagne, so it has the same terroir, pretty much the same microclimate, and that's 100% pure Pinot Noir, Blanc de Noir, and boy, does it have minerality, precision. It is delicious. It's $32, and this is something that I just go through so much, and I'm so proud to have this here.
So what I find interesting is somebody dropped this off, you tasted and you loved it?
Yes.
Did you know about this before?
Never heard
this. Just like popped into your life?
Yes.
You fell in love with it? And yes. Now that's a great story,
It was basically a couple of bottles.
And it's a great value, right?
It's a great value.
Quality to price?
Yeah, no, we've been killing it. We've sold a lot of...
Yeah.
I actually just did a very good friend's wedding, and they bought a bunch of cases of this stuff. I'm talking about like 15 cases.
Mm-hmm. Heidi, you have any suggestions or you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I also like the Perrigot and Richard. Crémant de Bourgogne. So this is coming from Burgundy as well. The grapes.
Is Perrigot the producer?
Yes.
That's right. P-A-R-I-G-O-T.
Yeah.
Perrigot monochrome.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a Crémant coming from Burgundy. It's all coming from the village of Savigny-le-Beaune. 100% Pinot Noir. They are able to do other blends there, but this particular wine is 100% Pinot Noir. And it's traditional method, and it spends about... I think up to 36 months on its lees before it's disgorged. And so I think this is a really nice alternative to a rosé champagne. It's priced at $32 and it's super tasty.
I was going to say, it looks like a rosé.
Yeah.
Yannick, when you open this is not a rosé.
No, it's clear. It's white. Blanc de Noir. Yeah, that's correct.
Those are great suggestions. It's funny, they're both Pinot Noir. All right, last question, and I think people fumble over this. And it's what glasses are best to serve champagne in. I think everyone is conditioned to flutes.
Yes.
There's two things. People are conditioned to flutes, and they're conditioned to champagne as a celebratory.
Yes.
You should drink it all the time.
Yes.
And when you drink it, what should you drink it in?
Well, the champagne flutes for someone like myself is not very nose accessible because I have a very big nose. You know what I mean?
Not that big. Your ego's a lot bigger.
Oh my God.
No, but I think, you know, I mean, I have glasses over at Contento, the Gabrielle glass. I think it's the perfect glass, you know, something all-purpose glass. I don't think you need to go further than that. I mean, it really brings out the aromas and all that kind of stuff.
So to that point, one of the reasons you do that is you want the opening to be bigger than a flute, right?
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with... Well, when you're dealing with terroir-driven champagnes, like Frédéric Savard, for example, you know, it's giving you complex juice. It's not just about the bubbles. It's about more that's going on, and you want to really taste the terroir and the vintage. So having it in a wider glass allows it to open up and to really allow it to be expressed.
I agree. So get rid of those flutes. All right. I think you guys have been very helpful to us for the holiday season. I want to thank Yannick, Benjamin, and Heidi Curzon from Contento. Up in Harlem, and Beaupierre, the newly opened Beaupierre Wine and Spirits. We're exactly on 10th between 46th and 47th, right?
Yeah. Exactamundo.
The beautiful thing here is pretty much any time Heidi and Yannick are going to be here, one or the other or both.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to come by and stock up on your holiday wines and champagne. So thank you again, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm talking with Aldo Sohn. the wine guru at the legendary Le Bernardin and Aldo Somme Wine Bar in New York City. The reason I say wine guru is I'm not sure beyond that there's the right title for you. So I've given you the wine guru.
I'm just right? a regular sommelier. Yeah, that's
there
it.
There you go. Here you go. Who walks around with a Tastevin all day?
A right? regular sommelier.
Yeah, true. You're right. All right. So, Aldo, I want to take advantage of your expertise for the holidays, and I want to focus towards champagne mostly. So the first question I want to ask you is, can you recommend a great value champagne for the holidays?
Absolutely. Probably one of my favorites right now is from Le Hertfrayer, the okay. Ultradition. It's really delicious.
And it's priced.
Yeah, it's not crazy. And it's a little bit, you know, it's a grower, but right. a really great grower.
Right. And tell people quickly what a grower is.
A grower is quite the opposite of a house, you know. A house owns land, but also given their size, they purchase grapes. And they have a style of that house.
Right.
Right? And that stays over a couple of years or decades the same. A grower is quite the opposite. It's like when we go to Union Square, go to the market, right? That farmer farms often biodynamically, organically, and is much smaller in size and varies as a result quite a bit. And I want to experience this in wine. You know, there's a beauty in different in the vintages.
Right, it's less house formulaic. You know,
I mean,
those houses
both have their rights and their place.
Or a crew, they make some, you know, wonderful wines. All right, so. The next question, it sort of segues into the obvious follow-up to that. If you wanted a splurge-worthy champagne, if you wanted to spend money, what do you go out and buy?
Money is not a problem?
No.
Okay.
Especially from you.
Yeah, right. I still have to go to work.
I mean your body of knowledge, what you taste.
I'm a huge fan of Cristal, Rödeurer Cristal. I happen to love that champagne. I like the philosophy. I love the people behind it. And even if you just go to the Rödeurer collection, the 242, even if you don't splurge that high, I think it's an absolutely delicious champagne. It negates exactly that rivalry between house and grower.
They're one of the big houses that's biodynamic.
Also,
for
yeah.
many years.
I mean, they're small among.
Yeah. but bigger than a grower.
But they're super respected. I love Jean-Baptiste Le Caillon, the cellar master, what he does, and the philosophy, and how dedicated he is.
Yeah.
And you can taste this immediately.
I agree with you. I mean, that's a great example. It's accessible, it's wonderful, it's always good. Because you're sort of in restaurant retail, let's take the wine bar. What these days is the most popular champagne?
Rita Germaise La Caravelle.
Really?
You know, it just fits the bill, first of all.
So we love Rita.
We love,
We're
I mean, who doesn't?
That she's still making her champagne. Yeah. It sells well.
It sells well. It tastes well, you know. It's there's so many check boxes.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah,
that's a nice answer. Mm. You know, I didn't ask this to everyone. I'm asking it to you because, you know, this is arguably one of the finest restaurants in the world, and you, as I said, are the wine guru. What's the greatest champagne and food pairing?
The greatest champagne in food pairing?
Yeah. What's the best champagne and food pairing? And then what's your favorite champagne and food pairing?
You know, I would have a hard time to answer that question because it becomes all really context driven. Because it's like looking for what is your favorite dish.
Right,
that would change, you know, is it in the winter, is it in the summer? Are the strawberries in season, if it's a strawberry dish
so
or not?
It's a seasonal thing?
It's a seasonal
you can
thing.
You have a gorgeous piece of fish, the sauce on it may change how you pair it.
100%.
Right? Yeah.
Or if it even just the preparation.
So then what's the advice? Drink whatever you want with whatever
you
want?
No, it's probably, if you want to stick on the safe side, go on a Brut version of champagne. And maybe not go on Brut Nature. Meaning because then they become more austere.
Right.
The moment you have a little bit of residual sugar, a little bit of dosage, you have a little bit more wiggle room to navigate.
Right.
Then the more extreme you go, the more specific it gets and the more dialed in it gets. I love them, you know, don't make me... it's context driven, but if you ask a free range.
See, I think it's fair. I mean, I think, you know, every question doesn't have that exact answer. And like I said, who knows this better than you? The answer is very complicated.
If it's on a general note, I stick on the safe side and I'm going to be fine.
I'm all for that. All right. So is there any other sparkler besides champagne that's exciting you now that we should be drinking for the holidays?
To be actually very honest, and then my answer might sound a little bit biased, and I have a second answer for that too. Actually, this year's with my sommeliers, I tasted some Austrian sparkling wines from Leumer, and actually they were blown away how delicious they were. And again, they're regular sparkling wines from Austria, but...
Right, because you're Austrian?
Yeah, obviously. No, but it...
You know, I'd say in the last 5 years, the recognition of those wines into the Burgenland, plus Lindenberg, Reed, all those... You know.
No, but I looked at my team, and they have no Austria connection. So I looked at that, and I saw how they responded, and I said, wow, this is actually impressive. And if you didn't let me go by with the Austrian answer, I actually like Crémant de Jura from Tissot. It's absolutely delicious, and it's really, really good. You don't have to go necessarily jump always into champagne.
Those are great.
Right?
And I didn't mention, but we're also going to post these on social media so people, you know, can see them. Plus, you know, the podcast.
There's actually domestic sparkling wine I actually like quite a bit. It's from Wenzlau.
W-E-N-C-L-A-U.
Yes, they're down actually in Santa Rita Hills, and
they're making a good sparkling.
Yeah.
What's the grape?
It's Pinot and Chardonnay.
Oh,
it's really tasty.
Wow. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's what people want to hear. They want to hear recommendations. All right, final question, and I'm going to let you go. And we discussed this a little before. When you pour a glass of champagne, what's the right pour? And I had asked you this off air, is it a third, a quarter, half? And you said, well, what kind of glass? So answer the question completely.
Well, we still are in this time era where people say, you know, wine glass. Look, we're in this kind of strange in-between times where, look, people still are attached to the flutes. And if they're attached to the flutes, then so it is. Right? So I say there, you know, listen, put the 3 ounces in, no more than that. Right? Really? Then you don't, because you want to have the champagne always, you know, chilled and fresh. It's no problem to pour from the bottle, right? But once the champagne is stale, it's stale. Right? That's one. And in a wine glass, I do probably the same, because each wine glass varies a little bit, right? I'm obviously very Zalto, obviously attached because of also my ambassadorship to them. But even there, I play around with the white wine glass. No more than 3 ounces. I like the freshness. I like that kind of component.
So if you're using a flute, you're saying 3 ounces. You're also saying it's okay and encouraged to use a wine glass because you like that bigger opening to let the aromas in and out. And even for that, and those glasses vary. A Zalto is different than a Riedel or whatever.
Look, champagne is one of the most sensitive wines you find.
So you need to be, you just don't pour away too much too little.
No, it's. Right. I give you maybe a little bit of a more rustic example. When I drink beer, I'd never order a liter. Or if you go to Oktoberfest, you get the big mug, right? They become too stale too quickly,
right?
That's why when you go to the town of Cologne, you order the traditional Kölsch, right?
Just drink a lot
it's just,
of it.
It's, yeah, because they're little, but they're fresh and crisp, right? And that keeps you animated to drink.
That's important. And that's actually a good tip, because if you're drinking champagne, you want it to be fresh. You want it to hold a little of that chill.
Correct.
I don't mind it when it warms up a little because the flavors come out. But most people want, you know, a little temperature to it. All right. Those are all great answers. I want to thank you, Aldo Sohm. Aldo from La Bernardine and Aldo Sohm Wine Bar right here in the center of Manhattan in New York City. Aldo, thank you and have a great holiday.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
I'm here with Annie Shi. Annie is a partner at King Restaurant and the new Jupiter Restaurant in Rockefeller Center. We're actually sitting at Jupiter. Congrats on Jupiter.
Thank
How
you.
How long have you been open? I know it's not a long time.
We are at the beginning of week four. We opened Thanksgiving week, so not much time.
That's crazy. I know you said it's a crazy time of the year, but it's a good time of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked in this neighborhood for a long time. This is like ground zero for like tourism and activity.
It definitely gets you in the holiday spirit. Yeah, that's for
sure. You got the tree outside. All right, Annie, so I need your help for some holiday champagne records. I'm reaching out to the experts, and I want to get their take on what we should be drinking. So first question is, can you recommend a great value champagne for the holidays? Something accessible.
Yeah.
You know, reasonable. I'm not saying cheap or expensive, I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think with recent vintages, it's hard to find champagne, I would say, under $50, $40 these days. But two that come to mind, one is a perennial favorite that always just delivers more like bang for its buck, is the Chartontaille Sainte Anne. That is
so
the
it's
favorite.
The Chartontaille, but the Sainte Anne.
Yeah, okay. That's the cuvee. That's their entry level, okay. And it's absolutely delicious, and I think really over delivers on its price point. And that you can find pretty easily. I would say like Astor Verve.
Good, better.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, wine shop or whatever.
And then something that is a little newer to us is Champagne Ponson, a smaller grower champagne that is also very reasonably priced. I think you'd have to seek this one out a little bit more, but it is absolutely delicious.
Is it P-O-N-S-O-N?
Yeah.
You're the second person today to recommend.
Oh, really?
So it must be good.
We are pouring it right now at Jupiter.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's such a pleasure to discover, you know, at this point, newer producers who are making great entry-level champagnes, because it is getting very difficult.
Is Ponson considered a grower?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so those are great ones. And I didn't mention, but we post on our social media.
Yeah.
So people, besides hearing the podcast.
Yeah, we'll Maxine Ponson is at the flagship of Ponson and organic farming, all that good stuff.
Right.
They're really great.
All right, this should be a fun one for you. How about a splurge-worthy champagne? What if money's no object, you're a baller?
That
you
is
got
a tough
dinner
one.
With a rich friend.
Yeah. My favorite all-time champagne producer is Cedric Bouchard. And those wines, talk about hard to find these days.
So hard to find and expensive.
Yeah.
Expensive because they're hard to find too.
Yeah. And with the past couple of vintages being what they were, you know, less quantity being available as well. So we've seen the price go up and the quantity dropped, which is always challenging. But he makes some of the most energetic, vibrant champagnes out there.
Can you find them sometimes?
You can. You know, they come out in the fall, and there are certain retail shops that do carry them. I know Leon & Son had some, Astor Wine had some, all the usual suspects, but they get snatched up real fast.
Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know if this question is redundant, but your favorite champagne?
I mean,
is it the Bouchard or
it is Bouchard? I just got married in the fall, and we drank Bouchard to start on both days of the wedding, because we got to visit.
If not then, when?
Yeah, exactly. And we drank it with some age, which is always really special. Another producer that is a little easier to find, but really still fantastic, is Pierre Baillet. Baillette. It's now run by Perrine Baillet, the daughter, and there's one particular bottling that I love, which is called the Coeur de Cray. It's a Blanc de Noir, and it's, you know, delicious, creamy, lovely dark fruit. I'm a Blanc de Noir drinker, so I always look for that category.
For my listeners, when you say Blanc de Noir, is that mostly or predominantly Pinot Meunier, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. It's usually a blend of Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier.
Okay.
You're seeing more and more Pinot Meunier these days, actually, because that grape has become increasingly popular. It was kind of a more neglected grape of the three in Champagne.
Right. It's having its moment.
Yeah.
So, is there any Chardonnay in this?
No.
So, that's why.
Yeah. Blanc de Noir, 100% cool. Pinot Noir Meunier.
All right, that's a good one. All right, any other non-champagne sparklers that are exciting you or we should be looking for?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want champagne, maybe you don't have the money.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I would say Cremants from the Loire are always great value. Obviously, for the Jupiter opening, we've recently have done a little bit of a deep dive into Italian sparkling, and one that we really love is the Donati Sparkling Trebbiano from Emilia Romagna, and that is a little more on the natural side, but absolutely delicious, and like has enough acidity to be food friendly. We love it here. Yeah.
We had dinner at King not that long ago. We had a sparkling rosé Lambrusco.
Yes.
It was lighter.
Yes.
It was delicious, though. Lambrusco, you think red, fizzy, dark.
But in that same kind of vein, there's this resurgence of Lambrusco producers who want to make, you know, what they're calling like real wine and not just
right.
like the dark red
yeah.
sweet stuff. And you probably, it was Terra Vive is the producer.
I think so. I have a bottle.
Incredible acidity on it. Really nice mousse.
Really.
And fantastic.
Yeah. My wife,
that's
Phil,
a great bottle, actually.
Yeah. And that's why you go to places like Jupiter and King, because you curate these great wines. So it's not a coincidence. All right. Last question. This is a work night, so I have to let you know. technical question. How many pours should you get out of a bottle? So I asked other guests what type of glass. Everyone's moving away from the flute to a more open wine glass. But if you like a flute, use a flute. It's great. But how many pours should you get out of a bottle? What is the pour about? And maybe there's no exact answer,
yeah.
but how do you answer?
So I would say there is no exact answer. Typically, you get 5 pours out of a 750 milliliter bottle of wine. That's around 5 ounces per glass.
Okay.
I would say for champagne, you can get easily 6 to 8.
So you can go
a little lighter.
Three and a half.
Yeah, I would pour like a little less than 5. I mean, I think for a good reason, the bubbles last longer, but also I find that I like to top up champagne so that it always has that nice, like, creamy mousse on top. And also, we typically in restaurants see champagne as a start to the meal, and amongst certain wine friends as an end to the meal, as almost a palate cleanser, and so it typically isn't that full pour. But I would pour, ideally, 6 glasses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to be around for the holidays, or because you opened, you're on a crazy schedule?
I'm on a crazy schedule. I will be around this holiday season.
Okay.
We didn't plan a whole lot because with Jupiter opening, you know.
You took a 9-week honeymoon or something.
I took a week and a half honeymoon.
Seemed like 2 weeks, but
it felt like 9 weeks because it was that relaxing.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank Annie Shee. Annie is one of the principals at King Downtown in Soho in the brand new Jupiter and Rockefeller Center. Thank you, Annie, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Just talk to me about champagne for a second. I mean, we can all drink Solas and, you know, be ballers, but if you want to drink champagne as a treat, but not spend a ton of money, I mean, where do we go with that? Is that, you know, some growers that are not, you know, super famous? Is it the Roederer? We did Roederer last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're biodynamic. They're reasonable. I mean, is that still a place to stay?
I think Roederer vintage wines are a steal. You know, they're such great wines, and they're not horribly expensive. You know, they're not cheap. It's not cheap to buy these wines by any means.
No, but for what you're getting.
But for what you're getting, you're getting a great wine for the price of what you would otherwise get a good wine for.
And that numbered series, I mean, I forgot what we drank last year.
I think it was 242.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's up a few since then or whatever.
I think they're on 243 now, yeah.
If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Leave a review if you like the podcast. And thank you for that. Follow us on Instagram at SBenRuby and on Twitter at BenRuby. I know it's confusing, but you can always use the hashtag TheGrapeNation to find us on both. We are on Facebook at TheGrapeNation. I will post everyone's recommendations on our social media sites. Thank you to everyone that joined us for this show. Robin Wright, Yannick Benjamin, Heidi Turzin, Aldo Sohm, Annie Shee, and Josh Green. Thank you to our engineers at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam Benrubi, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.